Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much for that news update. There'll be more news at 7 o'clock. Right now on this day, the Day of Reconciliation, back in 1431, a young 7-year-old named King Henry VI of England would be crowned the King of France. He would go on to be the only monarch that would hold both crowns at the same time. 1907, on this day, Theodore Roosevelt, the President of the United States at the time, would send out the Great White Fleet for a round-the-world parade. Effectively, that was a parade by the United States to announce to the world that they are a superpower, and they were parading their naval ships, stopping off at different ports internationally. In 1946, on this day, the great fashion house Christian Dior would be founded by its namesake founder, Christian Dior. In 1985, on this day, John Gatti would make a power move for the Gambino crime family, killing off two of its leaders and assuming control of the family. What a godfather move. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha, and welcome to this special edition of the holiday special that we've titled Success in Business. While there is no markets update today on the show, what we will be taking a look at is various conversations with various leading business voices and business minds. We're going to be having a conversation with serial entrepreneur Mike Schlebach about his businesses and how he's built them. We've also got a conversation with the co-founder and CEO of Seriti Resources Group Holdings, Mike Deke, around his business journey. Then we have a conversation with a female founder and CEO, the founder and CEO of Signia Asset Management, Magda Virziska. And then we wrap things up with a special in-studio guest conversation with the founder and CEO of Sifiso Learning Group, that is Ntate Sizwe Ntlasana. Stick around. I'm sure we'll learn a thing or two from these great voices.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We're taking a look at success in business on this particular day of reconciliation. I thought it would be an interesting thing to look at and get the perspectives of different individuals with different experiences. I'm joined on the line by serial entrepreneur Mike Schlebach to take a look at what he's been up to in the business world and what his entrepreneurial journey has been like. Good evening, Mike. Thanks so much for taking the time. As a serial entrepreneur and a founder of many businesses, what keeps you going at this point? What keeps you motivated to keep building businesses?
Well, I guess, firstly, good evening, Jimmy. It's great to be chatting with you. Yeah, so first and foremost, you know, I'm an uneducated individual. The furthest I got in the academic world is a matric. And then the next thing is that I'm fairly unemployable. And when you marry those two things together, you know, you've sort of come to the understanding that the only options left to you are, and if you want to make it in life and get ahead and, you know, make a living for yourself and your family, you've got to start your own businesses. And I come from a family of entrepreneurs, of, you know, people that have started their own businesses over the years. And I'm just literally following suit. And yeah, it's been a great journey so far. I'm 47 years old, and I've started my own business when I was 22, I think it was, my first business, and it's been one hell of a ride ever since then.
Mike, do you know how many businesses you've founded or been a part of or been at the beginning stages of or involved in at the beginning stages of?
Yeah, I would say somewhere in the range of 7 or 8. I started in construction. I started with a business that my very wise mother sort of laid the groundwork for, and that was she bought some property, some cheap property in the small town of Napier here in the Western Cape, or Napier, and she basically asked me to build a house for her, and so I learned the hard and quick way how to build a house. And that was sort of the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, you know. And from there, I went into buying and selling houses. So I'd buy a plot and build a house in it and sell it. And then I went into full construction after that, building houses for other people. And from there, yeah, another 6 or 7 businesses after that. So, it's been quite a journey.
Mike, how do you transition between businesses and between sectors and between industries? Obviously, as you said, some of the things are skills you learnt and picked up along the way. What keeps you thinking, I can do this, or I can try this, or I can figure this out?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't necessarily have the answer for you. All I know is that all of the businesses that I've founded or co-founded have been quite different and unique. I've always had this sort of innate belief in myself that when I think something is good and that the idea is good, I'll do whatever it takes to get the business off the ground and to see it through. And I don't really know where that comes from. You know, it's just I feel like sometimes it's something you're born with. And I wasn't born with an academic mind, and I really didn't enjoy school and studying and things like that. So, you know, thinking up ideas around business and getting them off the ground is a great joy of mine. And it's been one of the great experiences of my life. And I hope that answers your question.
Mike, what would you say some of the challenges have been? I mean, obviously, when you are in this unemployable landscape, it becomes very difficult to kind of see the differences and the different paths that you could take. And it's very easy to get discouraged. What are some of the challenges you've had to experience?
Yeah, well, I from my construction days, I went into and I opened a factory making custom windows and doors out of wood in the construction industry, for the construction industry. And 2 years into that journey, I ran smack bang into the 2008 financial crash, and I learned the hard way about basically my whole industry came crashing down and work dried up overnight. And so that was hectic, and then it's really important when you go into business and you need funding and you need partners and investors and things like that. I've learned some really hard lessons around choosing those individuals or entities along the way. And in 2020, we also, I was sort of 5 years into building the brand. I founded Sealand, and we ran smack bang into COVID. You know, no one saw that coming. And then with COVID came some partners that, decided that they wanted to take advantage of a situation, and, so that left me without a business, essentially, and in those early days of COVID, which was really hectic. But I'm not one to sit around and feel sorry for myself. And I think that's probably one of my biggest and best traits. And I'm a great believer in the universe sort of providing a pathway for things. And, when I left Sealand, I did a trip up to Johannesburg to go and buy a secondhand vehicle, and when I got there, the vehicle wasn't there, and I went through this whole journey of trying to find a car up there to buy, and on the way I eventually found a car to buy, and then on my way driving it back down to Cape Town, on that 20 odd hours trip, I came up with the idea of Screen. And Screen is basically an online platform that connects people that want to buy secondhand vehicles with professionals like mechanics or used car industry guys that can provide a high level review of the car they want to buy before they buy it. And so that Screen was started a few years ago, and then also after Sealand, I'm an avid surfer, and I travel up and down surfing up the west coast of South Africa a lot over the years. First time I went up the west coast was on my 13th birthday, and ever since then I've been going up there a few times a year. And then after Sealand, I had some time, and I started taking a close look at what was going on the west coast from a mining perspective. And that's led me down another journey in starting an NGO called Protect the West Coast. And, we're an organization that is 4 years old now, and that's sort of activating against illegal mining up and down the West Coast. You know, yeah, all of these sort of business and entrepreneurial journeys come with, you know, both the good and the bad. And, you know, often people say that things happen for a reason. And, you know, and I'm sort of, I feel that is a very true statement.
If you're just tuning in, we are chatting to Mike Schlebach. He's a serial entrepreneur as part of our special today on successful businesses and building success within the business landscape. Mike, what are some of the decisions you've gotten right? What are some of those key moments that you can think back to and you say, I'm glad I made that decision?
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about that the other day. You know, I'm very happy with my decision making as a business person, as an entrepreneur. I've made all of the enterprises or businesses that I've started over the years have all been successful, barring that one, you know, that ran into the 2008 financial crash. But you know, they've all, so the single biggest decision to start a business and to get it going and to do whatever it takes to make it work, I think is probably my best decision making thing.
Mike, would you say there's a secret to surviving those extreme events, the 2008 financial crisis, 2020 COVID, who knows what else is going to come out? Would you say there's something in business or a particular trait that you'd have as an entrepreneur that would make you more resilient or more likely to survive those kinds of difficult life events?
Yeah, I do. You know, as an entrepreneur, I think, and if, especially if you've done it a few times, you know, you develop a very thick skin. You know, just getting a small business off the ground without much money, you know, you've got to put yourself out there and you've got to expose yourself and in ways that may seem uncomfortable at the time, you know, but ultimately that sort of prepares you for when the times get really hard. And those type of big events are, you know, it's a time when entrepreneurs often rely on their intuition, you know, and they, you know, it's a time for ingenuity. It's a time for innovation. And it's a time for thinking out of the box. And I think that, you know, most sort of high-level entrepreneurs, that is potentially their best trait, is to make things happen when nobody else can and you know, have a thick skin and just move on.
So, Mike, what are you up to now? After all of the businesses you've built, after all of the experiences you've learned through, what are you up to now?
Yeah, so, you know, I have three businesses on the go at the moment. Protect the West Coast, which I mentioned. It's an NGO, and then Screen, the car inspection business. And then about a year ago, I developed a new concept around circular manufacturing. So what we do is we work with local industry here in Cape Town that produce material waste, like the Bedouin stretch industry, like the advertising industry and the sailing industry. And we take the waste from those industries and we repurpose them and turn them into high quality products like bags and accessories. And then we offer, you know, brands and schools and events and things like that in the Cape Town or Western Cape area the opportunity to white label our products, so we can we make these products, you know, out of waste, and then we put other people's brand name on it, so that brands can offer a sustainable range in their product ranges, and schools can offer, you know, very high quality upcycled circular products to their pupils and things. So it's a really great and exciting space, and it really plays into my values as a social entrepreneur, and also a you know, my love for the environment and doing what I can to protect it.
Being able to move on, have a thick skin, and make the most of a bad situation, those are the qualities you need to be a successful serial entrepreneur, or just an entrepreneur in general. Mike, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. We wish you the best of luck with all of your businesses, and thank you for sharing with us the journey that you've gone through. That was Mike Schlebach, who is a serial entrepreneur, joining us for our look at making it in the business world.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we continue with our reflections on success in business, and we're taking a look at the business stories that have provided a lot of inspiration over the years, and business stories that make a lot of sense when you look at them. I'm joined on the line by the co-founder and CEO of Seriti Resources Group Holdings, Mike Deckett, to take a look at his journey through business and just get a sense of what success looks like to him. Dr. Deckett, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. I think before we get to where you are now and what you define success as at this point in your journey, I want to go back to sort of where it all started, where it all began. I mean, from growing up with your grandmother, did you ever think that one day this would be where the journey is? Was this always part of the plan? How did the journey all start?
Yeah, I was raised by my grandmother, and I did not think that it was going to be like what it is today, what I'm experiencing and where I am. I just focused on the things that I thought I would be good at. And the things that I thought I would be good at was, one, to be disciplined and ensure that, one, I don't lose the spirit of that strong work ethic that I inherited from my grandmother. And from the basics at home, doing things, following up on things, waking up at the time that my grandmother taught me to wake up. I still wake up at that 4 a.m. Why? Because I believed that story of building that success. So I never thought it would reach a stage where I am today. And I'm humbled by that, yeah.
Dr. Deke, when you look at that journey and the discipline and the work ethic that came through, I mean, for those that know you and for those that have engaged with you and worked with you, some would say that you certainly haven't lost it. If anything, you've gotten even more disciplined in your involvement with the businesses. How do you go from kind of being one of the founders of a business like Optimum to having to leave and start all over again and building Seriti from the ground up, building Masimong from the ground up? How do you keep transitioning throughout life? Because I imagine life would come with a set of challenges, and to remain focused in that time must be something.
That's very true. Mm. That's very true. You know, when we build Optimum, within the confines of our dream was to build a powerful coal mining business. And it so happened that in 2012, when Glencore bought the business, I could have easily retired. I could have walked away and started doing something maybe for fun. But I realized that it's in me, it's in my blood, and I'm not going to. The word retirement, the word walk away is nowhere in my vocabulary. And I started working with the teams that we built Masimong Group Holdings. And then we started building Seriti Group Holdings with the partners we have, the shareholders we have. And that the spirit is still there, the grit, the resilience, the fighting spirits. I'm not going away. I am going to continue building what I'm building. And much as you know or hear stories of people like Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm still going to build what I'm building. Now, the other interesting thing about my story is the fact that I just am an operator who doesn't believe in that story of being strategic, sitting in a head office. I struggle with that. I interfere a lot, and I've been criticized that I'm a poor delegator. I'm a micromanager. Yes, I am. I'd love to know the details. I'd love to know what is happening in every business. If possible, I'd love to spend more hours in all those businesses to make sure that they are successful.
I actually have heard a story about that from a mutual friend of ours who has said that at any given moment you will be up, you'll be on site at the mine instead of in the office, because that's just the type of person that you are, and that's quite an inspiring thing. Dr. Deke, how do we move into sharing? You've said that obviously you don't want to, you find it difficult to have these delegation conversations and all of that, but at the same time, you've been able to build a team and multiple teams of individuals. And I want to look at sharing, and I want to look at trust and the role that that's played in business. I mean, I know the story of the relationship that you have with Doug Gain, and you've told that story before. And with Masimong now, with your son being involved in the Masimong group, how do you bring together those people into the space and say, this is the team, this is how we move forward, and this is the team that's going to make the business work?
Well, it's alignment. I work with people who are aligned to the story. What is the story? The story is, how do we build something that is generational, something that will be part of the history, something that will not be forgotten in 20, 30, 40, 50 years' time. An example of the team that I work with, it's people who are A, smarter than me. They're super smart. Two, highly qualified people. Three, these are the people not only who have intellectual horsepower, but these are the people with the energy to drive things. I mean, you mentioned the name of Doug Gain. That gentleman has worked with me for years, and he understands one word: resilience, resilience, resilience. And it's the trust that you entrust on people and say, can you do this with me? And people believe in the journey. And such people, the ships, as they say, if you listen, watch the movie Good Godfather, they talk about the ships sailing the same direction. That's the team that you want to work with. And I've never, ever had people working for me. People don't work for me. They work with me because we traverse the journey together. So for me, I drive that resilience, and I make sure that I instill the spirit of, it's a can-do attitude, and we build big things. If you can see the team now that is building our new exciting business in Seriti Green, it's a team that can do things, and they are going to make things happen.
In your journey, you would have seen and faced multiple obstacles. How do you approach obstacles now? Understanding that, of course, it's everything from a learned point of view. There were some times where you didn't have the knowledge of how to navigate things. But how do you see obstacles now? Because those come no matter which industry you're in, no matter which sector you're in, no matter how many years of business you've been at it for, there will always be obstacles. How do you navigate those?
Well, the most important thing is this, it's the ability to listen. I found that I am a listener. It's a skill I learned over the years. I'm not a good listener naturally, but I've learned over the years that I tend to listen a lot to people. I tend to take advice. That humility, that I've tried not to deal with arrogance on my side. That is, I've tried not to be. I know that it can creep in, things like, you know, that hubris, thinking that you know it all. I'm careful about that. So the most important part for me is to listen. That's number one. The second one is, I have a tendency to focus on the goal at hand. What is it that we want to achieve? What is it that we're driving for? And right now it's growth. Right now it's resilience. Right now it's the future. And those are the things. I don't get distracted easily. And the third important one is, I worry a lot about health. You know, my health is important. I know that if my health were to fail tomorrow, everything crumbles, everything falls apart. And you can't pay anything for good health. If you have good health, you think quickly, you are able to focus, as I said earlier, and the most important thing, stay humble. Stay humble and listen. I listen a lot.
If you're just joining us, we're in conversation with the co-founder and CEO of Seriti Resources Group Holdings, Mike Deke, around his entrepreneurial and business journey and what success has looked like to him in the world of business. And Dr. Deke, I want to move to something that you said. You touched on it now around the various aspects that go into building the team, guiding a team, making sure everything is there. And we just spoke about, obviously, how you navigate challenges, and that's an important aspect of it. I want to look at the side of it where the learnings come through. So you learn from the challenges, you learn from the mistakes. How do you keep that learning constant? How do you stay afresh or abreast of certain things?
Well, I try to read a lot. I read quite a number of books at the same time. And at times I lose focus, as in, what am I reading now? But I continue to read. The second one is, I love to mentor young people. And that's where you pick up a lot of ideas from young people who you sit and listen to them. I try to allocate an hour a week or an hour, 2 hours a week, young people who are aspiring business people, aspiring corporate people. And I sit with those people. And the third big thing for me is, I watch people who have traversed this journey. I have watched people who have done great things, and I say, what is it that has made that person different from me? And again, it's just that big word to learn. I'm not scared to learn. I learn every day, and people are teaching me a lot of new things. And the younger generation who are coming up now, they tell you of interesting stories. But again, you don't move away from the things that you've found that have delivered success for you over the years. There are certain things that have become a habit to me, and nobody's going to stop me from waking up. Nobody is going to stop me from reading a lot of things. Nobody's going to stop me from, I think I'm a poor delegator and I'm not proud of it, but it's just, I just want things to be done. I don't walk away until something is completed.
It's important to be self-aware and to acknowledge those sorts of things. I suppose it makes you an even stronger person, whether it's in a business capacity or even in a personal capacity. And Ntatateke, where do you think businesses or individuals or companies are going wrong in the journeys of business? I mean, business, as we said, is not an easy thing to venture into, whether you're doing it on behalf of a corporate or in a personal capacity. Where do you think people could improve when looking at strengthening their businesses and finding success in business?
Well, the first one is, what is the why does the business exist? Why does your business exist? What is the purpose of my business? If you can answer that question, that's important. One. The second one, the business is about decisions. Every day, every minute, every hour, it's decision, decision, decision. And I must tell you, the decisions we make are tough. As they say, hard things are hard. Don't be scared to get involved in hard conversations. One. To make sure that the word no becomes comfortable with you. If you become uncomfortable saying no, you're going to have a problem. And somebody taught me an interesting lesson years ago to say, no reasonable man has ever built anything of significance. No reasonable man. You have to be unreasonable at times. You have to. There are conversations and discussions and exercises that you get involved in business where you feel that you are very uncomfortable about, but they will yield results. They will yield results, and don't be scared to confront those challenging times. It will happen in business. It's never easy at all. There are times when it's easy. You make money, you generate value, create value, you make shareholders happy. But when conversations become hard and difficult and decisions become hard to make or to call on, I'm telling you, that's the time where you have to stand up and be counted. And if you're scared of that, those conversations and that discomfort, don't venture into business.
Looking at your journey now, looking at all of the years that have spanned across all of the different sectors, everything that you've done within the business realm, when you look at your journey, and I don't want to say your career because it's been more of a journey than just a career, what would you say defines success for you at this juncture?
At this juncture, one, I don't want to lose focus. I want to build what I'm building now. In other words, I don't want to chase more than 20, 30 things all over the place. I want to be focused, focused, focused. The second one, it's a strong work ethic. I'm not one of those people who would say, where I am now, I'm not going to wind down and say, reduce my working hours, don't go to the office on a particular day. No. In fact, it's getting worse now that I must push, I must be resilient, I must be gritty in making sure that I stay the course. And am I tired? No, I'm not tired. Why? Because I have to worry about my health and ensure that I continue to deliver the results that I've consistently delivered to the shareholders, to the different stakeholders, and try and put a smile on every person's face.
How are you finding that balance? You mentioned, of course, earlier in the conversation that health is the most important thing. Nothing matters outside of that. And I imagine second to things like health within the wellness space is carving out the time for family, carving out the time for the things that are important. How do you carve out that time amidst staying focused and staying so dedicated to work?
Well, it's unfortunate that I'm one of those people without hobbies. I don't play the things that are called hobbies. I don't have. My life is about waking up, a very boring life, go to the office, work, go back home. And I spend time at home. I try to make sure that I spend time and pay attention to family issues. But at the center of everything, you're right. family is number one. Family is the cornerstone of everything. Then the second part is the, your health. Everybody who worries about you, at the end of the day, you end up sleeping at home. And that's where you rest. And that's where people will look after you and make sure that. So I don't have hobbies. I'm not one of those people who would say I spend 2 hours somewhere doing something else. My focus is just the office, then home. Just the office, then home.
From humble beginnings to disciplined growth, and above all else, a strong focus on work and balancing everything in between. I think we'll leave the conversation there. Dr. Dekker, thank you so much for the time and for the insights. It's been an absolute pleasure. That was Mike Dekker, who is the co-founder and CEO of Seriti Resources Group Holdings, joining us for our special on success in business.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And now for the rose among the thorns when we're looking at the conversations we're having today regarding success in business. This next guest is a woman who has started, founded, and run a 300 billion rand asset manager in South Africa, building it from scratch with nothing but her intellect, intuition, and a whole lot of courage. I'm joined on the line by the founder and CEO of Signia Asset Management, Magda Virzyska, to take a look at her journey through business and understand how she got to where she is today. Good evening, Magda. Thanks so much for taking the time. A young Girls High scholar from Pretoria Girls High, did she ever dream that she was going to change the world?
I haven't quite changed the world, but no, the answer is not. Look, you know, when I was at Girls High, we've just arrived in South Africa. I didn't speak any English. So I think I was just concentrating on trying to learn English and Afrikaans. I didn't get an exemption from Afrikaans and pass exams. And then, you know, the main focus was how do I fund my studies, because my parents came here with nothing. So there was no money for me to study at university. So I was much more focused on how do I get the money to study at university than I was on my, you know, future career in business.
So speaking of gathering monies, how does Signia then come about in November of 2006? I mean, you've gone through high school, you've gone through the studies at tertiary, you've worked through Coronation. Mm-hmm. What happens in November of 2006 that says to you, this is the business I need to be going into?
So I think it's a journey that started a little bit earlier, which is, you know, I finished my actuarial science degree. I had no idea what I studied. I had a bursary for that. And I was then obliged to work at Southern Life for 4 years, since the bursary ran for 4 years. And, you know, within 6 months, I knew that actuarial science wasn't for me. One, I mean, it was deadly dull. Two, I was surrounded by people much brighter than me. So then I wangled my way into the asset management division of Southern Life. And then, you know, hop skipped from that to a very brief stint at Alexander Forbes as investment consultant, and then landed up at Coronation Fund Managers, which then was a startup. So really there was, you know, five people and a dog. And I think my office was a cupboard. It was me and I was, you know, sharing my office with printing paper. And then, you know, I got very involved in building Coronation. And through that, you know, I've always been a believer in learn as much as you can. So, you know, I had a very fortunate start, because at Coronation, I literally could do everything from administration to marketing to being the legal person, to being the client relationship manager. So, you know, I acquired all these skills. And then Coronation listed 6.5 years later on the JSE. And, you know, there's a long story to who got shares, who didn't get shares, who was the owner. So I resigned. And after my experience at Coronation, I decided that there is no way I'm going to work for another man again. So literally, you know, walking out of Coronation, a little bit of adrenaline that drove me all the way to home. And then I went, what the hell have I done resigning from Coronation? But literally 2 days later, I was at lawyer's offices registering my own company. So I had a company, but, you know, I didn't have any staff. I didn't have any capital backing me. And that wasn't Signia yet. This is 2003. I had no capital backing me, you know, and literally I had to take out a bond in order to finance a little office. But within 6 months, you know, the most interesting part of my career was a personality that featured large in the media then, Zico Malo, And he spent 13 years on Robben Island with Nelson Mandela, was released and made a lot of money very quickly from some, you know, interesting BE deals. But anyway, he bought a company called African Harvest Fund Managers, and he needed someone to run it, approached me and said to me, Magda, you've got a business, I've got a business, let's make a deal. Of course, I didn't have a business, I had a small office. But I thought he had a business, which he didn't. It was a semi-bankrupt company. So anyway, I took over very quickly. African Harvest, 3 years. 3 years later, Nzi found me and said, Magda, I've recovered my money, sell the business. So I landed, I mean, literally. He says, you've got 2 weeks to sell the business. And I've never done a corporate transaction in my life. But I learned quickly on the job. So we sold African Harvest very quickly to Cadies, which doesn't exist today. Lots of lessons in that. And that's why I landed up with a bit of money. And at the same time as I was selling Cadies, a group of my employees came to me and said, Magda, what are we all doing next? And I said, well, who is we? And they said to me, well, here's a list of those of us who do not want to be sold to Cadies who want to come with you. And of course, you know, I didn't have a plan and there wasn't a vision of Signia in my mind. But I had all these people staring at me. So the next thing that, you know, I remember doing is renting some offices at the waterfront. I could take, I think, 6 or 7 people. I couldn't take everybody. And we sat around the boardroom table and said, I said to the guys, okay, where is our business plan? We don't have one. So what are we all doing? You know, and that's really how Signia was born. And, you know, we put up a whiteboard and I said to everyone, guys, we can't imitate. I mean, all we know is financial services. That's all we know. But we can't imitate other people because, you know, if we start imitating a Coronation, Investec then, or an Old Mutual, you know, there are always bigger guys in town who will eat us up. So we need to innovate. And really the concept of innovation was, okay, asset management, but how do we differentiate? And that was, you know, low fees, transparency, no jargon. I banned the use of any investment jargon when we talk to clients. You know, and that's really where we started. And technology. We had one genius, software genius, in the room with us and who still works for Signia today. And we pointed to him and said, okay, you develop an admin system for us. I am going to go off and hunt for clients and you guys set up ops. And really, this is how we started. And then, you know, attracted institutional investors, you know, largely actually initially because of administration systems that we've built ourselves and then asset management, particularly as index tracking. I mean, it was all about passive management. And that was the start of Signia.
Magda, you said something quite interesting around not working for another man and being the person that you are, being the strong-willed person that some people might not know you to be. I want to get your thoughts around some of those challenges that you particularly faced, whether it was because you were a female, whether it was because you were in a male-dominated industry, some of those challenges that might not have been there, but that were unique to you in your journey.
I think the unique part was actually starting this journey when I was very young and in an asset management company. And, you know, the feature of an asset management company is that there's a lot of money swirling around. There are bonus pools. There are very large bonuses being paid. And, you know, as I have learned in life, money brings out the ugliest side of human nature. I've seen people do anything for money. So in an environment like asset management industry, where there is a defined bonus pool, so every cent that someone else gets is a cent you're not getting, you know, that's an industry that creates, doesn't necessarily attract, but creates a lot of aggression and a lot of fighting. People spend enormous amount of effort on trying to maximize their bonuses. So that's why it's an environment that doesn't necessarily attract women. And I have worked with women before in asset management, and or women who have worked for me, and they would quit. And every single time I would ask, well, why are you leaving? And the answer would be uniformly the same. Magda, who needs this rubbish, crap? Who needs this aggression? You know, women are intuitively collaborative. You know, women, and that has been my experience, women don't want to fight each other, despite teenage girls' battles. You know, women do want want to work together in a kind of teamwork setting. So women were actively opting out of asset management. And consequently, you know, I landed up in an environment which is, you know, this common phrase of male dominated, but that is wild. It is male dominated and it remains male dominated today. You know, so, you know, my personality was, I don't think it was so much driven by, you know, I have some unique qualities which enable me to work in a male dominated industry. It was more about the fact that, you know, I was a refugee, and there's certain, you know, baggage that comes with being a refugee, and not dissimilar to a lot of people, you know, in South Africa, with this concept of black tax. If you lift yourself up, you're carrying your family with you in terms of having to support a lot of family members, which I ended up doing, even family members in Poland. And as a consequence, you know, you view your job as something that you have to do because you don't have a choice. There are other people that rely on you doing what you're doing. So, you know, when I started working at Coronation, male industry notwithstanding, we obviously paid, you know, very comfortable salaries and bonuses. So I never viewed myself as having an option or the luxury of opting out of that job. And hence I had to adapt. And, you know, I always talk about this concept of, and I'm quite sure that, you know, psychologists really frown upon it, but, you know, I call it, because it's dissociation. But really, whenever I'm in a boardroom or a meeting and with a lot of, you know, men voicing their opinions in whatever way they choose to, you know, I imagine myself as being in a perspex box. So any comments that are thrown at me, I kind of look at them and go, okay, let me imagine a frog hitting my perspex box and sliding down. And that means, you know, I never get upset. I never get emotional in a meeting. And I think that is what, you know, kind of enabled me to survive. And then, you know, this concept of not working for, maybe, you know, saying for another man is a harsh one. It's basically coming out and saying not working for another person. Mm. I want to be able to make my own decisions, my own choices, be accountable for that, and obviously not be told what to do by anybody.
What a journey, what a story, what important life lessons to take from the conversation. I think we'll leave the conversation right there, Magda. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. That's Magda Virzyska, who is the co-founder and CEO at Signia Asset Management, joining us to reflect on her success in business.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Sometimes in business, it's not good enough until you have your name on the wall or your name on the building. And my final guest for this week's, today's show, is a gentleman who has done exactly that and done it before anyone else has done it. I'm, of course, referring to one of the founders of the old Sizwe Nzaluba Ngobodo. I'm joined in studio by the business icon that is Sizwe Nkasana. Malume Sizwe, thank you so much for coming into studio. This is probably one of those conversations where it becomes a little difficult to start because there's so many different things to get into. But I suppose a good starting point is, how does one build one of the first black audit firm in the country in the middle of apartheid before we kind of transition into democracy? And that's the start of a very lengthy business journey.
Well, for starters, it wasn't the first, by the way. Professor Wasban Gutlu had started the first audit firm that's black owned in Umtata. Mine was the first in KwaZulu-Natal way back in the 80s. So we were serving a need which was not met and not served by the traditional firms at the time. And understanding that this was a very difficult time getting out of, or in apartheid actually, where the only audits we could do were essentially NGOs, especially those that were more progressive. And we're trying to support South Africa's move towards democracy. Otherwise, it was law firms and doctors and other professional people who needed services of accountants who were qualified. So that's the kind of work that we're doing in the earlier years. It took me a while, actually, even after having qualified as a CA, to get into it. It took me about 2 years while trying to figure out what this was going to be about, what the business model was going to be about. And then eventually I got started. And I was traveling all over the country, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng at the time, serving clients, and the need just grew. And because my wife was a medical doctor at the time, my client base was mainly doctors, a few lawyers, shopkeepers, a few NGOs, and it really just grew. And we used to travel throughout the country, starting by employing just one person, who was a receptionist and a bookkeeper, and then the firm grew, and suddenly we had a whole office. And we established a branch in Johannesburg, because obviously, being the economic hub, it was natural that there would be a bit more work in Johannesburg. And then one thing led to the other, and that's how Sizwe Ntsaluba Koboto was created. Initially, it was Nkonki Sizwe Ntsaluba. Mm. So we started off as Sizwe & Company, then merged with the firm in Umtata, which was Nkonki & Nkonki, and then Sango Ntsaluba, who was operating in Johannesburg, and we created this national firm, which, yes, today is the fifth largest firm of auditors and accountants in the country.
What does success in business look like to you? Because as someone who has done it privately, and then gone and done it at an SOE, and then gone and done it as the CEO of First Rand, I imagine you would have experienced so much in that journey and along the way, whether it's within these organizations or in your personal capacity. What would you say defines success in business?
Oh, there are many different dimensions. It's quite a complicated question because there are leadership dimensions in establishing a business. There are mindset dimensions. You know, you've got to have a certain mindset that you're going to be an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur. Like, for instance, if you are operating within a telecom or within a First Rand, as an example, there are still similar kind of things that you have to do in those institutions that what you do when you're starting your own business as an entrepreneur. But essentially, the dimensions which are really important to me have been about making a difference, have been about leadership, have been about purpose. Because when you look at, for instance, all those businesses that I've been involved in, the way I've always thought about, you know, my role in those businesses has been about, you know, like in Sizwe & Company, as I said earlier, you're serving a need, you're training young accountants. So it's really, really difficult as a black person in those days to find any firm that was prepared to sign you up and train you as an accountant and give you articles of clerkship, which is the practical training to become an accountant. So we wanted to create a home because the firms where we would have been trained, you know, the first batch of, say, maybe 20 accountants in the 80s would have been trained mainly in the Africana firms that were doing work in the homelands at the time. So it wasn't home for you. You were sort of trying to assimilate into this sometimes very hostile environment where you didn't quite belong. Yes, you made, you know, your way up the ladder, but it was not home. So there was a purpose of creating something where a lot more young people could feel like they're at home. And then, you know, fast forward to Telkom. Telkom was quite an interesting one because we were emerging out of apartheid, obviously, in 1997. Government was trying to now figure out how to run state-owned enterprises or state-owned companies. And they had a particular mandate. Like at Telkom, the mandate was, let's train black engineers and technicians. Let's include women. Mm. Let us connect people that were underserved. Because as far as the previous regime was concerned, you know, a lot of white people would have been connected to communications or telecommunications at the time. And let's prepare the company for efficiency, which ultimately would lead to a listing of that company. So that appealed to me quite a lot because, you know, you had a company here at Telkom, which at the time touched the lives of every single person in the country, even those that were not served, because we all need, you know, communications. So that was really important. And, you know, for my 8 or just over 8 years at Telkom, we accomplished a lot of those things, which was about change and inclusion and development and skilling people and so on. And then at First Rand, it was also about, you know, financial inclusion is still a big issue when you think about it. But also, you know, for me, there was also a personal side of, you know, having run a state-owned company, can you run a private sector company with a very different dynamic, with founders who had started the company and took it really to a point where it was one of the largest, you know, banks, not just in South Africa, in the African continent. And, you know, you come in as the first batch of a professional manager or professional managers, you know, in that kind of environment. And can you really make it work? So there's an element of proving yourself, or maybe proving to yourself, that you can actually do this. It was the case as far as I was concerned. And yes, it was a successful 10-year journey at First Rand. And then after that, it's been a purpose of what we do about skilling and training the young people, our children. What kind of education system do we want to have? And how do we build the skills and competences of young people to address some of the fundamental issues that we face in South Africa? Unemployment, inequality, and all of this. And that's how I started Sifiso Learning Group, which has four companies within it. They're all education related. We have schools, Future Nation Schools. We have Future Nation College, which is a teacher college. We have Sifiso EdTech, which is an education technology company. And we have a real estate in education company. So, but the fundamental purpose there is about how do we develop and train young people.
If you're just tuning in, folks, we're in conversation with Sizwe Nklasana, who is the founder and CEO of the Sifiso Learning Group, but I'm sure everybody knows the name from different businesses that he has led and founded in the past. We're taking a look at success within business and how we navigate that space. Well, Ms. Sizwe, you mentioned the education side of it, and anyone that knows even a fraction of what you've done and your history and your involvement with things like the National Education Collaboration Trust, it's a very clear thing that this for you is almost a North Star. It's a passion. It's a very focal point for you to say, I need to empower those around me. But more so than that, I think it's something that resonates with yourself, but also with Dr. Dlamini, having met her as well. How do you stay as focused and as humble as you are, considering everything else? I mean, if we look at the resume on paper, there are very few resumes in the country that would be as impressive. But as an individual, you still find the time to give back, the time to be involved, the time to say, I want to pursue the things that make a difference. Because it's very easy to pursue money.
Sure. So, I mean, yes, it is driven by passion, my passion in education. Because, you know, typically when people retire from corporate life, and I'm generalizing here, people would sit on boards and you have time to do those things that are important to you, which may be leisure kind of things. For me, it was quite different. You know, South Africa is a wonderful place. It's a wonderful country, you know, because every challenge and every problem that we have in this country, in fact, in this continent, presents an opportunity to do something. And I wasn't about to do what, you know, maybe other people do who've been successful in corporate and sit on boards and maybe travel and play golf and those kind of things. Solving the problems in education was really, you know, this chapter of my life after corporate, after the privileges that I've enjoyed in this country was really particularly important. Yes, I'm a co-founder of the National Education Collaboration Trust, the NECT. We work with the Department of Basic Education. We are in more than 20,000 schools out of the 25,000 schools in this country. We help and support the Department of Basic Education under Minister Sivio Gwahube now to deal with a whole lot of the issues, from how we train teachers to the curriculum issues to service delivery on the ground. So over the last 12 years, we've been really successful in supporting the department at national, provincial, and even just at a very local school level to do the things that it's supposed to do. We run a budget today, which is quite significant, supported by a number of corporates, both local as well as international, plus government itself, because they've seen the impact that we can bring. You know, I was the chair, non-executive chairperson of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme during the hashtag Fees Must Fall period. And coming out of that, it was quite clear to me that there are a number of things that need to be addressed in terms of how students who come from poor and working class backgrounds are supported. And hence, I started IGUSASA Student Financial Aid Program. Over the last, 8 years, we've raised more than 2 billion rand, funded thousands of students at universities that are pursuing occupations in high demand, engineering, actuarial science, medicine, you name it. You know, so that's grown quite significantly. And obviously, education is where I am now. So if you look at the whole ecosystem, I don't serve on corporate boards other than foundations and trusts that are involved in education, otherwise my own social investment companies, Sifiso Learning Group, that my wife and I, started. So, yeah, that's what we do.
Wise words, sage wisdom, and I think we'll leave the conversation on that very, very powerful note, because I couldn't have put it better myself, and it's better that you hear it from someone that's actually got lived experience through that journey. Thank you so much, Malume Sizwe, for joining me in studio. Sizwe Nklasana, who is the CEO and founder of the Sizwe Learning Group, joining us in studio to wrap up our special edition of Success Within Business. That's the show for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sticking around. We hope you had a really good day of reconciliation. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, with usual programming. Markets will return tomorrow as they are open. For now, it's just gone 7 o'clock. The news team is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news. From my side, good night.